Okay, aloha, 欢迎收听老杨游记。This is going to be an English episode with a very special guest, that speaks mainly English. But then later on, Lucy will, dub our parts. I'll dub my own parts, and then Lucy will dub this special guest's parts. Later on, we will release, a Mandarin version.And then I will do this disclaimer again in Mandarin. 各位听众大家好，今天的节目呢比较特别，因为我们的特别来宾呢是一位说英语的人，所以我们会这一集会以英语进行。那稍后大概一个礼拜两个礼拜左右呢， Lucy 会帮我们这位特别来宾配音之后，我们会重新试出一个中文版，所以如果大家不是很习惯听英文的 podcast 的话，可以等我们的中文版。Let's welcome our very special guest, Michelle.
Hi, my name is Michelle. I am a cram school teacher here in Taiwan, but I have my master's degree in linguistics. Ooh. And I have had the honor of being invited on this wonderful podcast to talk a little bit about linguistics and Creole languages and language change.
我是米水，我是补习班老师，我也学中文，但是我说中文说的不太好，所以不好意思，我要用英文，做这个 podcast 但是我希望你们喜欢我的，怎么说那个语言学的题目，所以谢谢听我。
You've done amazing, sweetie.
I'm like, are my tones okay?
Thank you. You've done really well. So the reason why that we had to do this episode in English is because we are going to talk about something called Creole languages, which we will later on explain further to you. Please bear with us.And since Michelle is an expert in Creole languages, she did her master's dissertation on this topic. We thought it would be very interesting if we could have her on our podcast and give us some insight. would you mind telling us a bit more about your background? Why did you do your master's dissertation on Creole language?
Yeah, of course. So my mom's family is, so not my mother, but her parents and her aunts, uncles, a bunch of our extended family, is originally from Haiti, in the Caribbean, for people maybe who aren't that familiar with it. So it's a Caribbean country. It speaks officially French and another language called Haitian Creole, but really the majority of the population speaks Haitian Creole. My mom and her family spoke French. Most of her family can speak Haitian Creole. She cannot, she can understand it. So I was really interested in taking a look at this, like, why is French the one that's important? Like, how did it come about, this Haitian Creole? And, I mean, Haitian Creole is very special because it has roots with European languages, which, you know, I guess we'll talk about a little bit later, but it has also roots with African languages, and it's a language that's, the majority of speakers are Black people from the Caribbean, and usually when you're, like, doing linguistics, at least in Europe and America, or in the U.S., a lot of the linguistics tends to be focused on European languages, or Indo-European languages, heavily on that European part. There's not as much breadth as maybe there should be, especially at the higher education level. So I was like, yeah, let's look at Creoles, because I know a little bit about that. I think it's cool. My family has something with that. So, yeah.
I've been wanting to do this episode with you, this interview with you, for a long time. But then because of the language barrier thing, we had to do this in English. So I've been postponing it for a while. But then one reason that made me want to do it right now is because last year, I think around December or November, a Taiwanese author wrote a novel in Japanese and won a very prestigious Japanese literature award. And then that novel was about, I think it's about an island that only allows a certain group of women to speak a holy saint priestess language that is a Creole. Mm. And then the author said that she got this inspiration from a Yilan Japanese Creole. So because the Japanese people used to colonize Taiwan for 50 years, and then in the Yilan area, which is the northeast area in Taiwan, there still is a indigenous tribe called the Sadiq tribe. That Creole is basically 30% Sadiq and 70% Japanese. When I did my research about Creole, almost every book include the Yilan Creole language. They said it is one of the few Creole languages that has nothing to do with European languages. Oh. So I think it's pretty interesting and very special. And then, of course, because a non-native speaker of Japanese, a Taiwanese author, actually won a very prestigious Japanese literature award, apparently this is bringing attention to the topic Creole. So I thought maybe we can try to do this now.
So Creole is generally, it's a language where you have one main language, and that is where you get a lot of your vocabulary from. And then you have one or several other languages that supply, in the traditional view, they supply the grammar and the semantics for what is the language. So semantics would be meaning. Sorry, I'm trying not to be too technical. And usually this would be, so the language that supplies the vocabulary is known as the superstrate. And that's the one that usually has the higher level of social respect or prestige, something that makes people say like, yeah, this is the language people should speak, or like, this is the language that has the power. Whereas the languages that give the grammar or the meaning, those are the languages that don't have power within the speaker community, like within the society. So in this case, right, Japan is the one that's in power. They had power over Taiwan. So I'm guessing most of the words sound very Japanese, or at least like, you can trace them back to being Japanese vocabulary words would be my guess. Like, this is... And then the ones, the grammar, and then the meaning would be from Sadiq and probably other local languages, whether that's Taiyu or other Aboriginal languages. So in that context, that would be an example. And yeah, that's generally what a Creole is. You have one powerful language with your vocabulary, and then one or more languages that give you your grammar and your meaning.
When I first heard about this thing called a Creole language, I was a bit confused. I kind of mixed it up with the other languages that are mixed. For example, Singlish in Singapore, they speak a very special kind of English that is mixed with sometimes Cantonese, sometimes Fujianese, and then their local Malaysian languages, and then English. So I was wondering why is Singlish not considered a Creole? How is it different from a real Creole language?
I think maybe something like... I'm going to go with, I don't know if I can I say that, Chinese-influenced English.
Chinglish?
I don't know. Can I? For those of you listening, I am not ethnically Chinese, so at all. I guess you got that partially from my mom's family being from Haiti. But with that, my first inkling would be that it's because it could be code switching. And code switching is when you speak two or more versions of a language or two or more languages and you switch in between them. So one example could be like, you know, maybe you speak Taiwanese with your family at home, but then if you go to school, you're going to speak usually in Mandarin Chinese, but then maybe you'll switch with your friends, like some words into Taiwanese. And then I guess with Chinese-influenced English or like Chinese English, it would just be similar where making the choice on which language to use, so you're not, it isn't its own system where you're going to have this regular repetition of a grammar. That isn't to say that code switching isn't systematic. There have been studies done specifically on Spanish-English bilinguals in, I believe, in New York, and their code switching is very systematic. Oh. Like how they switch in between Spanish and English is very systematic, but to say it has the system of its own grammar, and you know, and that's when it gets tricky, because maybe code switching, if you were to isolate that speech community, would they have a Creole in like a few generations?
Maybe.
It's possible, mm-hmm. right? So, but I would say that's maybe the big difference. But I would say that Singaporean English, there's not a widely accepted agreement on that, but I would definitely say it exhibits features of a Creole because it is very systematic in how it uses, for example, like a la ba ma, or like already. There's been a study mm-hmm. on Singapore English where they show that already maps onto le in Mandarin. So it's not used like already in English. It's used like le in Mandarin. And that's from Jiming 2005 from her paper.
I looked up this issue, and then there are two takes on why this English is not considered a Creole. The first take is that the whole code switching or the whole Creole features are not as stable yet. It is showing some features and it is showing some systematic changes, code switching changes, but then the whole language as a system is not stable yet, grammar-wise. And then the second take is that to have a language considered a Creole is to have almost everyone of that nation or of that place all speak this Creole. While in Singapore, they think only the more Chinese descendant groups speak Singlish, and then the more Malaysian or the other ethnical groups, they don't use as much of the Chinese features.
Mm.
So that's their take. I'm not sure what you think about this.
I definitely think the first part is true mm-hmm. about the stability. Like that's maybe a better way to put what I was trying to say, is that grammar is just a system. It's like the computer code for what your computer is going to do, right? Grammar is sort of like that. So I think Chinese English doesn't have that kind of stability yet, but it definitely could become that stable.
Yeah,
but I don't know that I would necessarily agree that it has to be a whole nation or country or a mix of people. And I think this is where what is a Creole becomes really tricky, is
mm-hmm.
you know, on that technical level, a Creole is you have one language in power, that's your vocabulary, and then you have the other language or languages that gives you your meaning. But if you look at language change throughout history, why aren't more languages Creoles? Why aren't more languages classified in the same way? And that's actually what two authors, De Graaf and Mufwene, they have talked about, where they go against this idea that the languages that are traditionally called Creoles, which tend to be languages in that were essentially formed during the Atlantic trade slave in the Americas and other periods of European imperialism.
Former colonies.
That, why do we say that these are so special? Why do we say that these are Creoles? And I would agree with them that I think a lot of it is really just regular language change. I mean, even English originally was this very Germanic language, but there was influence from the Normans and from French and from Latin, and I wouldn't be able to understand Old English today, right? And a lot of it's not only because it was mixed with other languages. Some of it is just language change, but some of it is because there's a lot of words from
French
borrowed. And Latin, yeah, that we took and you know, we changed. And I think that there is a good point to say that maybe the languages that are historically called Creoles are called that because of social reasons and not actually because they're all that different from populations coming together and then their language changing. You know, it's going to happen. I mean, I've lived in Taiwan, what, for a year? And even now, like, sometimes I want to
You're using Alabama.
Not even that, but like, I'll be like, oh, and this is really like, because I'm a linguist and I, you know, I think it's fun to play with language, but I'll be like, oh yeah, like I have to junbei something. Like that is something I will say. I'll use junbei because I like the word junbei. I like how it sounds. So I'll use it in English if I am with other people who understand what I mean. Like I'm not going to do that at work or with only English speakers. Or I'll be like talking to my parents who don't speak Mandarin, and there are just times I want to use Mandarin with them, and it's, you know, how does your brain process languages? And I think, why are some things called curls? Well, maybe it's more of a sociological, it's more what people expect, because before. Part of the original ideas traditionally put forth for why creoles formed was, at least in like the Caribbean and in the Americas, you have slaves being bought from Africa, being forced, and a lot of them did not speak the same language or didn't speak mutually intelligible languages, and they had to quickly learn the language of their of the colonizers, of the slave masters. And, you know, there's no way, it's so traumatic for them to have ever learned it perfectly. So then when they have kids, their kids aren't going to have access to a full language because the colonizers and slave masters aren't going to talk to them that much. And their parents and the other enslaved people aren't going to be using a proper...
The full version of the colonizer a language.
Yeah, it's not like a full language. There's gaps in the grammar. It's not a stable system. So this is the traditional idea. And that's so it's that the kids had to use other ways to acquire and make a language. But part of the thing that's pointed out is, well, why is that assumed? Like they were all like, those are a lot of assumptions. Why is it assumed that any of the people who were enslaved didn't speak any of the colonizers' languages when there were like trade ports and there were interactions before with Europeans? Why is it assumed that not enough people would learn the language to a full capacity? And why is it assumed that a changed language isn't a proper language? And another thing is, well, the Atlantic slave trade is a very unique moment in history. And I don't want to downplay that. I don't want to say that it wasn't unique in its own terrible, disgusting treatment of enslaved people. But to say that people have not, and like communities have not been traumatized before in ways that could have affected their development, I think maybe is a little bit naive to say in the history of language development. And I think the people who do say that don't say it in a way that they are maybe being fair to these historical populations who were brought to the Americas. And yeah, why wouldn't they have been able to learn a language, even if it's not the quote-unquote proper version, just like anyone else?
Just realized that I forgot to ask about your own experience in speaking the Haitian Creole.
Oh yeah, I cannot speak much, unfortunately. I know a little bit. I guess this kind of relates, right? Because until 1961, Haitian Creole was not recognized as a real or standard language. It was considered just like a dialect or its bad French. Like that was the idea, which is not true. It's its own stable system. And even if it's a dialect, don't call it a bad version of a language. That's terrible. Yeah. So my grandparents were aware of this. And so they only spoke to my mother and her siblings in French. They can, maybe now not as much, but growing up, they could understand Creole. They just couldn't speak it. And for my mom kind of took on that attitude as well. Like, oh, French is like the better language, and not in a way where she like was actively, you know, these are things that are entrenched in how we think, but it wasn't really until I was a bit older, like in college, that I was like, oh, why am I only learning French when I could be learning Creole? And I wish I had put more time into learning Creole, and I hope to put more effort into learning Creole, especially having some competence in French. It feels a little bit like that is always the language that's pushed up. And whether that's French or in other countries, maybe like Spanish instead of a Spanish-based Creole, or, you know, the standard version is always pushed. It's the version with power, with that you can be educated in, is the idea. And I think just personally, I was, and I am, like, really sick of that idea. I think it's ridiculous that we don't allow kids to be educated in their language when it is possible, which somewhere where the majority of your population speaks Haitian Creole in Haiti, and there's still a big push to educate kids in French as if it were their first language, is not helpful for them. And for me, it definitely creates like a divide if I do want to connect more with the diaspora community, because I don't speak Creole and I speak French, and that's really snooty, for lack of a better term. Like, it can come across that way, especially because I only knew a little bit of French growing up and I had to actually study it. So it is a little bit snooty if you think about it, right? Like, oh, so you learned French because of your Haitian background, but you didn't learn Creole. It's like, oh yeah, that's not really great, is it? Yeah.
So in your dissertation, you mentioned that there is a debate about how Creole language is formed. And you told us about the more traditional theory. And could you maybe tell us more about the newer theories, supposedly newer?
Yeah, so the two like newer analyses of Creole that I looked at were from Mufwene and De Graaf. Specifically, they talk about Creole in as not being a special case of language evolution. It's just how language is generally learned. Yes, the historical circumstances were very special, but that shouldn't be that we discount how people learn languages. And specifically, Mufwene, I think, is the bigger proponent of this, is that people have, or there's two versions of a language. There's your inside your head version that everyone has, and everyone's inside their head version is different. So even with my own family, I have a different English maybe than like my brother or my cousins. And then that's where your external language is, and your external language is like how you speak with other people. So obviously it's not so different that I can't understand other people who are talking in English. The outside language, the external language, is everyone can or should be able to understand if they speak that language. But inside, maybe how your brain is processing it is a little bit different. So yeah, so he says, no, I think that everyone has their own individual version of the language, and they might have a little bit, like their features are slightly different, and you don't really know it necessarily if you're talking, or it doesn't stop you from understanding the person. But over time, these things can be picked up by different people, and that will maybe change how they also have the language in their mind. So it's like you're swapping traits, and it would have to be enough people would have to have the same thing that they pick up for a language to change. And whether that's two languages coming into contact with each other, or even just like how someone's like own language can change if they maybe move to a different city, right? And you start picking up how people in that city start saying things. For example, when in the UK, and just like people said takeaway, like in where, at least where I'm from in the States, we say takeout. Like we don't say takeaway, but
you don't say takeaway.
No, oh my we don't God, say takeaway. We say takeout. It's like when I first got to the UK, I was like, oh, they were like, oh, do you want this for takeout or like to go? And I was like, do you mean to go or to stay? And she was like, takeaway or sit in. And I was like, sit in. And, it, you know, obviously I got her meaning, but it just threw me for a loop because I wasn't expecting it. But in the US, yeah, you'll say like, oh, do you want this to go or to stay? So you don't really say it like, at least where I'm from, I don't know, like the U.S. is a big country. It's very possible this is like specific to where I'm from. We'll be like, you want it to go or to stay, or you want takeout or, and so even something like that. And like, at least even now, I'll still say takeaway.
It grew on you.
Yeah, I think when I was back in the States, I switched back to takeout and to go. But I think here a lot of, for some reason, I don't know if it's the translation or I just have like more friends with British English here. But I will say takeaway more here than I ever did back in the States. So even something like that is an example of like, yeah, we technically have the same like language, but, and it obviously it's a more extreme example because it's different dialects, and this could happen within the same dialect. You can have like something is slightly different and then it just takes and then more people use it. But of course, then it also has to be passed on because then you have things like slang, which, you know, usually you have it for a bit and then it's not popular anymore. It's not really used. Like no one says groovy in English anymore to, oh, I'm so sorry that you guys have to translate groovy into English. from English into Chinese.
That's Lucy's job. Lucy. one question. So according to this second newer theory, it's basically the Creole language forms because a lot of the people in that group are exchanging and switching their inner language and their outer language. So my question is, what makes it so different in Haiti and in Taiwan? We were also colonized and we also have a lot of different language groups. We have Taiwanese, we have Hakka, we have Mandarin, we have some indigenous language, and we of course have Japanese as well. So what makes it so different that the Creole features in the languages spoken here is not as strong as the Creole languages in Haiti that has already finished or has a more progressed version of the inner-outer switch?
I think part of it is, again, the unique historical situation. Enslaved people, a lot of times, they didn't necessarily share a language. Or if they did, it was like their second language. It wasn't necessarily their first language or a language that they were like more comfortable speaking. So I think part of it is just the variety of people, how they were split up, and just like the difference in power. Like, and this isn't to say that colonization in Taiwan wasn't serious and didn't have like bad effects. I just, I think maybe the difference in power between like having an enslaved population learning, having their languages mixed, and then also being forced to learn, in this case, French. I think that situation is one big reason why it's different. And then with Taiwan, I think also maybe it's just a community difference where you have less admixture of the languages in the community. Maybe it wasn't necessary in the sense that if more people just code switched and it didn't ever stabilize, that could be part of it. But I even Taiwanese Mandarin, though, for example, does have a lot of influence from, I mean, I guess the other widely spoken language here would be Taiwanese, quote unquote, Taiwanese, Southern Min, Hokkien, however you want to call it. Because I thought Ama and Agong, like, for example, right, that's grandma, Ama, Agong, yeah, is grandma, grandpa. And I thought that was straight up Mandarin.
Oh, that's Taiwanese.
And it's not? And I was like, what? And they're like, yeah, no. And I was like, what do you mean it's not straight up Mandarin?
But it's stabilized in Taiwanese Mandarin. Everyone exactly. says Agong, Ama. No one says Ye. Only some a few people say Ye Nai Nai.
Yeah, or like I actually just mentioned to someone the other day, and they were like, oh, I don't remember which one was. I think they said their dad's family, they called Ye Ye Nai Nai, and their mom's family, they called Amama.
Yeah, Wai Gong, Wai Po.
And yeah, and I was just like, but when I first learned that, like when I first started learning Mandarin, I was like, it's not Mandarin? because that's what I heard all the time. Mm-hmm. So I think there are like examples of it in Taiwan, but I think a lot of what comes with the language change is also societal. And mm-hmm. I think maybe just the societal situation in Taiwan wasn't the same, but I would definitely be interested to like contrast the, for example, like the situation in which that Japanese Sadiq Creole formed versus like other mm-hmm. areas, or mm-hmm. were there Creoles and they just got stamped, like essentially stamped out or like just they aren't spoken anymore, especially as you have efforts to get more people speaking and reading in, like, for example, like the Aboriginal languages or Taiwanese or Hakka. Are there things that maybe there were Creoles or maybe there were like other instances of this type of language contact and it never stabilized? Yeah, I mean, I don't know that that is the case, but it's always possible. So
between the Taiwanese and Japanese and Mandarin situation, I think one thing is that after the Japanese people left, the KMT, the nationalists, came and they issued a very strict law of only speaking Mandarin. So it suppressed the development of Japanese here in Taiwan, the remaining development of Japanese in Taiwan and Taiwanese in Hakka. So I think to that extent of oppression, it stopped or it killed any potential for Creole formation. So that's what just came to mind after our discussion just then. So that's probably why there really isn't any Creole language aside from the Ilan Japanese Sadiq Creole. So do you have any other things that you want to share with the audiences or the listeners about Creole language or about Haiti?
Haiti recognizes Taiwan officially, so that is awesome.
Do we still have an official relationship with Haiti?
Knock on wood, let's hope it doesn't go. But as of now, there is still an official relationship with Haiti. And I hope that continues, and I hope that the two countries can continue to support each other. So that's really great. Haiti is a complicated country because there are a lot of issues that need to be addressed, but I think a lot of times it's written off, which is not the correct way to address those issues either. And that's coming as someone who is from the diaspora, who is very American, listen to Haitians and other Caribbean and Creole speakers about their experiences. I'm one person with the family background who is lucky enough and privileged enough to do this degree and have the chance to like look into this. But like support people who come from these communities.
Mm-hmm.
I guess the last thing would be talking about Creoles and like Haitian Creole. It is a specific situation, Creoles, but it is an example of language change and also of these languages with different powers in a society that have lasted to this day, right? People in Haiti, like only about 5-10% of the population in Haiti speaks French with like full competency. Most people speak Haitian Creole, and Haitian Creole is not one big language. Like if you go to different, like there are dialects that are very different from each other. And some are closer to French, especially like those who are people who are more like middle and upper class or like live in like bigger cities maybe. But there are a lot of different like dialects of Creole. They're not always like you can't always like understand each other, which is normal for any language. Like there are some dialects of English I can't understand. So it's not all one language, but it's not just something with Haiti or Creoles or European language, a lot of times European languages, but not only European languages. Just be mindful of how other people talk in the sense that, like, maybe they are going to say something different from you. Maybe they're not going to say something that's standard English, standard Mandarin, standard whatever language. And that's okay. Like, people talk differently, and you should be honored to hear a different variety as long as the person isn't being rude to you, right? Like it probably means that they're comfortable with you.
Mm-hmm.
People speak differently. Like I'm sure there are people from other parts of the English speaking world who don't like my accent, and you know, that's fine. Or like, you know, everyone uses language differently, and just be respectful, be mindful, and have fun with language, with again being respectful.
Okay. Would you maybe like to say bye to the audiences in Mandarin?
Bye, guys. Thank you so much for having me on. It's always a pleasure to talk about linguistics and language and also just to talk with such a cool person. So really, thank you so much for having me. And
thank you.
Thank you, everyone, for listening. And okay.
Thank you for sharing with us.
谢谢大家听我。我不知道怎么说的。
How do you say share in Mandarin?
Huh?
How do you say share?
Share, 我不知道啦。中文不太好啊。
OK, 分享分享。
分享哦，我应该知道。我应该知道。就谢谢大家听我，我很开心跟你们分享。
想。
分享我的那个题目。所以我希望你们我希望你们觉得很有趣的题目不好意思我说的不太好但是真的我很感谢谢谢你谢谢你们
谢谢
谢谢
Thank you Michelle Bye, bye. See you in a few weeks